Welcome back to the Pastor's Pregame Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Scheffler. I am joined today by Pastor Bruce Miller, and we are talking about the importance of connection, specifically connection with other believers in small group communities where people can truly feel known and loved. What can each of us do in our groups to help every member feel cared for? That's what we're going to talk about in this episode. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Pastor's Pregame Podcast. I am here again with Bruce. 2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row. This is starting a trend going
We're starting
here.
A trend. No, we're kind of back to our regularly scheduled programming for the next few months. So we are in the middle of Connect Four, which has the most fun graphics I think we've had in a long time.
Right. And I like playing that game.
And the game's good.
I will let you know that there was a challenge laid down of maybe doing a staff competition on Connect
Four. No way.
I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but
yeah, we need a tournament. A Connect Four tournament. Yeah,
there are a couple staff people who challenged each other, and we're throwing down and saying who's going to win.
That's awesome. I did notice we had a big one in the lobby.
We do. Apparently, we have some Connect Four champions among us, as far
as
I know.
That's awesome. Yes. Well, we are talking about Connect Four because we're talking about what do you connect for.
Ah.
That works in English, not in Spanish, okay. Apparently. And we're also kind of doing 4 weeks. And we're in week two. And last week, you did a great job in the sermon sort of laying out sort of the overall, like, why, the big picture. Why do we need to be in a group? Why do we do small groups here at Christ Fellowship? And just kind of encouraging people, if you're not in one, think about this might be the time God's opening the door for you to join one. So now for the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about the benefits. Was that how you would phrase it, of a small group?
Yeah, benefits and maybe also purposes or goals. Those are all different ways of looking at the same thing.
Yeah. So this is care, or creating caring groups. And we kind of hit on this a little bit last week when I asked you, what does an ideal group look like? You know, as a pastor, you have a vision for how you want these groups to go. And one of them is that people would care for one another. So I thought we'd kind of unpack that just a little bit. It fits in with our missions. Well, it's not really our mission statement. It's just sort of a phrase we use a lot around here, which is that we want people to feel known and loved.
We call it a motto, I guess.
A motto. Okay. Yeah, that's probably good. I was going to say slogan, but that sounds too commercial. Because it really is our heart. We want people to genuinely feel known and loved. And I think probably, would you agree that isn't that small groups is kind of where that happens?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's one reason why you keep saying
it's really difficult to be known and loved in an auditorium with hundreds of people.
Right, and it's really difficult if you're relying on church staff.
Yeah,
because we do love you and we do want to know you, but there's a couple dozen of us, and
that's
multiple hundreds of you. So we need the people. Plus, that's not the biblical model. The biblical model is the body of Christ caring for each other and loving and knowing each other. So if be known and be loved is what we hope happens in these groups, how do we do that? What can we do to help people feel known and loved in our groups?
Yeah, I think it really is challenging let's just take it to a really practical level.
Yeah.
It's the safest thing to do, or maybe the path of least resistance, is to keep the conversation shallow.
Mm.
And you're eating some chips and dips before everything starts, and the conversation is just superficial.
Yeah.
And that's fine at the start. And there's nothing wrong with a little bit of chatting.
Yes. Like the weather.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I think there's two things you can do. One is you can ask a deeper question.
Yeah.
And you know, it's how are you really doing kind of a question.
Mm-hmm.
But, tell me your story, or tell me, hey, what's been a highlight this week? Or what's something that's been a struggle this week? Anything you've been challenging?
Yeah.
You don't. And then the person can choose to answer at any level of vulnerability. But at least you've asked a question.
Yes.
That's opened the door to go beyond the weather.
Yes.
Then the other approach is to share yourself.
Mm.
And that's can be scary, but we all choose, maybe it's not all conscious, but we choose how vulnerable we share.
Sure. Well, and with reason. I mean,
yes.
You don't want to walk in and just spill your guts to every person you meet.
There's the principle of oversharing.
Yes. And we probably all have been either guilty of that ourselves or have encountered someone who does that.
Sort of the TMI problem.
Yes. It's like you don't need to know everything.
Yeah. I think more often the problem is the opposite.
Yeah.
Which is we hold back too much.
Mm.
And we don't share. We hide.
Why is that so hard? Why is it so hard, do you think, for people to be vulnerable?
Yeah, what do you think the fears are? What are people's fears of being vulnerable?
Well, we don't want people to think badly of us.
Yeah, people are going to judge us.
Yeah.
They're going to think we're not the perfect Christian.
Right.
Because we're all perfect Christians.
Right. I think that's probably one of the main reasons.
I do
is
too.
We don't want people to think, if I go, oh my gosh, I'm struggling with this X sin, or, you know, I'm really scared about this thing, they're going to, you know, we assume people are going to think, oh, well, you know, she doesn't have any faith.
They're going to look down on me.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe she struggles with that sin, you know. Which people are probably not thinking.
No. And they're probably thinking, oh my gosh, me too.
Yes.
And
yes.
It actually is an open invitation for them to share. And I know for me, there was a time when we were going through something years ago now, really hard with one of our teenage kids. And it was enough to be, the police were involved. And that was super embarrassing. And I, on one service, shared. Mm-hmm. This was in the early years of the church, and just said, I need to say this is what's going on, because it was public record. It was,
yeah, it was out there. Yeah.
Not something that was secret, and shared with the whole church. And it was super scary, and I didn't want to do that. I felt like I'm going to look like I'm a bad pastor. And even, yes, what kind of pastor am I?
A bad parent. Like, how can I, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reverse happened. It was kind of a turning point in the church, really, maybe at a deeper level. The number of people who came up and were like, oh my gosh, me too, or you're real, or thank you for sharing. And whether they had a similar issue or an equally deep issue of a different kind.
Right. Just the fact that you were willing to.
Yeah. And so rather than it losing people's confidence in me, kind of surprising to me at the moment, it actually gained confidence.
Yeah.
Because I'm feeling like, should I resign? I mean, am I qualified to be a pastor?
Yeah. 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 Well, and I think that's true, though, because I think if we come off as lofty and high above everyone else, because and obviously we're not. And I mean, I don't just mean pastors. I mean all Christians.
All people.
Like if we act like we've got it all together, then people don't feel like they can trust us. It's like you wouldn't understand what I'm going through because you're perfect.
And I think you don't have to like spill the beans and tell your deepest, darkest secret right away. But you can take little faith, little risks. Yeah. Let me share a little bit more, maybe without sharing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And watch people's response. And I think you'll be surprised that people actually care about you, love you, pray for you, and may have some good wisdom to share. You know what? I went through that 5 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. I think we make up people in our head. Like we assume they're going to react in a certain way, which most of the times our worst fears are not realized in that area.
And I think some people are worried about, well, privacy is a big issue these days. And you do need to share about yourself, not someone else.
Yes, that is good counsel.
And sometimes that's challenging when it involves your family.
Yeah.
So you have to just really be wise about what to share and not share about even your kids.
Yeah, but you can be a little vague in
that's
areas.
Right.
And I do this too, you know, and I encourage when I lead a group and say, my rule is your prayer request. At least one of your prayer requests must be related to you.
Yeah.
Like I'm happy to pray for your Aunt Jenny's 15-year-old pug, but I want to know what's going on with you. And so you can be very vague about that. You can say, you know, I'm going to have a challenging week at work. And if that's where you start,
right,
then we can pray for the challenging week at work. And you don't have to tell us anything that's going on that might break
and
someone's
then
confidence.
Someone might go deeper and go, I actually have been put on a performance plan at work.
Yeah.
And I'm actually scared I'm going to get fired.
Yeah.
And actually, I made some mistakes at work. And, you know, you can choose how much you share from challenging situation to,
yes,
here's what's going on.
And it may be, how long has your group been together?
That's right.
You know, again, like we talked about last week, and I loved it in your sermon. You were like, you know, your fear is you don't know anybody. Well, yeah, you don't know anybody until you go to the group. So you start in those early days, right? It may take a few meetings before you're willing to go, you know,
and
it's deep.
Another fear is a fear of gossip. This is tied to privacy, but it's a fear of people are going to share your stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's wise as a group to covenant together or kind of have ground rules that you say, hey, what we say in the group stays in the group, that kind of a deal. Or, hey, one of our commitments is absolute confidentiality in this group. And then you need to reaffirm that. And when new people come,
yes,
reestablish that. Or just periodically, once a year or so, go, hey, let's just all remember and remind each other. Nobody's sharing with anybody. And then frankly, if someone violates that ground rule, it's appropriate to call that to account. And probably privately, but say, hey, remember we all said we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And you did.
Yeah.
And then they can apologize and learn from it and move on. But I've seen that not to be as big a problem as people fear.
Yeah.
It's usually not that common people do that. No, I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
Yeah. But, and sometimes it happens inadvertently. I know, right. I got in a situation in college one time where I was trying to be very circumspect about a situation that I was telling my group about. But somehow, wouldn't you know it, one person in the group, and this was at UT Austin, right? 50,000 people. And one person in the group just happened to know this person.
Wow.
And used her context clues, went to the person and said, Lisa's talking about you. And it became this whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So I have really probably erred on the side of not sharing much of anything because that burned me so bad. And I was right. Like, I don't want to be that person. But yeah, I mean, you can do it in ways that are respect everyone's confidentiality and privacy, but yet still share.
And I have that in sermons, a question for this, that's not a small group situation, but it's how vulnerable are you in a sermon?
Yeah.
And as pastors, it's a general question.
Yeah.
And some of the principles are, now this is a public setting, so it's different.
Yeah. And it goes on the internet.
That's right.
It's better
to be vulnerable about something that happened a while ago.
Yes.
Than something that happened last night. Like to say, my wife and I got in an argument 5 years ago or last spring, as opposed to this morning, my wife and I got in an argument. Yeah. It just, the recency
yes.
is a factor. And then, like you said about other people, I've committed not to say not to use someone's name in a sermon or someone's story without their permission.
Right.
Or my children or my wife. You know, and I have a couple of times missed my rule and
it turns around and bites you.
It reminded me not to do that again.
Yes. Yeah. But the point is, we just want to be, you can be careful and also vulnerable at the same time.
And when you're sharing about yourself, it's different.
It's different.
I love you're saying have a prayer request about yourself. So in your group, if you really want to be a caring group, choose to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
That's going to help you. And then choose to ask questions that open the door for someone else to be vulnerable beyond the surface and then listen to them.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say, how can we then,
that's right,
on the receiving end, encourage more transparency in our group? And so listening is huge.
And so oftentimes in a group, someone has a bit of an agenda. If you're leading the group, you have a plan for the evening. That's what I mean by agenda. I don't mean like a bad agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have a plan for the evening and you're thinking, let's do snacks for about 30 minutes. We're going to do a Bible study for about 30 minutes. We're going to do prayer for about 30 minutes, whatever your plan is.
Yeah.
And sometimes someone will start sharing and they're going a long time.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is off the plan. I would encourage you to be sensitive. If they're sharing some heart-rendering story, now if they're sharing about their aunt's dog, let's move on.
Yeah.
But if they're sharing something personal about them and it's deep and it's emotional and it's right now, sometimes it's better to scrap your plan for the evening and give them attention and draw that story out and have the whole group surround them and pray for them, listen to them. I mean, generally speaking, when you have a group, everyone has a sense of how much time they should take. Like if 10 people are going to share a prayer request, you know, 1 minute each, you're at 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But sometimes, and that's good general social human dynamics, but sometimes someone has something bigger and it's totally appropriate and the right thing to do to let that moment breathe. And then other people will realize, hey, when it's my day and I'm in the storm or I'm in the fire, I could share and take 30 minutes and share my crisis and this group will listen to me and support me.
Yeah, that's really good. I think being vulnerable, when I was young as a leader, I was not good about that. Right. I was like, we have an agenda. we have a plan and I'm moving on.
We got to go through these 7 questions.
Right. We got to talk about the Bible study. Right. Yeah. I'm here about the Bible study. And as I've gotten older though, I recognize how wrong that was and how it really is about the people.
That's right.
The agenda can go out the window if it needs to. And not every week. Like if you have someone who's chronically hijacking your group to talk about themselves.
That's right.
Then that's a private conversation.
That's a private conversation.
And what that may be telling you, and not just as the leader, but as anyone in the group, is, hey, this person needs a little extra attention.
That's right.
And so maybe you could be the person who says, hey, do you want to have coffee this week? Or, you know, hey, would you like to have a phone call later? I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah, you turn the frustration into an opportunity to minister and an opportunity to disciple them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yes, the other thing we can do is, you know, for those of us who are very expressive, guard your facial expressions. You know, really, don't look shocked or horrified if someone shares something.
I don't know if you're the best at that.
I am. I'm great at that. As I gave him a dirty look. No, I'm kidding. But no, I think you have to learn to kind of school your responses.
You do.
Because if someone shares a big something in their life, you can't react, or you are really like, the other thing is ask follow-up questions.
That's right.
Don't immediately start giving advice. I think small groups, especially Christian girls, maybe this is a women group thing problem too, but we love to start going, well, I have a doctor that I can refer you to, or here's, you know.
Well, I will say men love to fix things.
Yes.
Generally speaking, not caricaturing, but yeah, I think you're exactly right to listen. There's such power in listening, giving people eye contact.
Yeah.
Giving them all the signals that you are really listening and caring. And inside, give them your full attention rather than thinking, when's this going to be over? Or how long is this person going to share?
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Wow, I don't know if this would be a big deal for me. This is a big deal for them. And I want to really love them well. So a key way to love people and care for them is to listen.
Yes, absolutely.
Attentively.
And ask follow-up questions. And don't, you know, I've made it a rule for myself personally, is I don't give advice unless I ask permission first or unless they ask for it. Otherwise, I'm like, unless I have something from the Word of God that I think needs to be shared.
Well, advice isn't really helpful unless somebody wants to receive it.
Right. So. And, but I've,
even if it's fantastic,
but the
advice,
teacher in me is like, but I have a reference, I have a resource for you. And that's not helpful. And it does shut people down.
Yeah.
Cause if people feel like they're going to get a lecture every time they share something,
right,
they're not going to share. Okay. I want to talk about the scary word that starts with an A that a lot of people don't like. But I really do think it's part of caring for one another, and that is accountability.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't want to have to call it that exactly, but I think that's part of the being known part, is are you willing to allow people, to give people permission to comment on things in your life that they, if they see a problem.
I'll give you a simple way that I think it ties to care.
Yeah.
Is someone, say, doesn't show up to a group meeting.
Yeah.
And then not the next one, and not the next one. They miss 3 meetings in a row. No one calls them. No one texts them or emails them. And they feel like, I guess nobody cares.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't show up and no one even called me. Well, the accountability is, hey, we all committed to come every week.
Yeah.
And so the accountability, which is also care, is to call or text and say, hey,
is there something going on? Yeah.
You weren't there Tuesday night. Are you okay? And we missed you.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't the same without you. And I thought you were going to be there. And I was looking for you. And I was hoping to catch up with you. You are holding them accountable. Like, you said you were going to come. You didn't come. Same thing for church. They sit by you. You usually see them at church dropping off the kids. Or, hey, I didn't see you at church. You okay? And some of the accountability is, well, we slept in. Or,
yeah.
You know, but what someone wants to know is, someone cares enough that it matters to them that I was missing.
Yeah. I think that's good. Yeah.
That's a simple.
Yeah, that's a simple one. And I think as a group grows closer together, and as you do grow in trust, to trust one another, there will be people in that group that hopefully you'll feel like, I'm okay if you say, I'm a little concerned about X in your life, or I'm seeing Y. And I also read in a book recently that accountability is not, we always think about it in the negative, as in like, stop sinning.
Right.
I'm going to hold you accountable for not sinning. But also, it's, are you using your gifts? Are you using your talents? You know, are you dreaming big for God? Are you envisioning how you can serve more in the kingdom?
Yeah, it's great. I've seen groups really challenge each other to serve in that way. Like, God's given you all these gifts and abilities, and you're not using them.
Yeah.
Are you serving anywhere in the church?
Yeah.
Or even opportunities to grow, like, hey, we're taking Digging Deeper. Do you want to come do it? Or,
that's good.
Hey, the Rise Conference is coming up. Are you going? Because we're going, and we want to get fired up and inspired, and this is really cool. And that's a way of encouraging each other to grow.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So maybe encouragement rather than accountability would be a less scary word.
It can be, hey, we all said we're going to do the Engage God Daily and talk about it at our group. Did you do it this week?
Yeah.
Because we all said we're going to use some of those questions or we're going to talk about it. Or we all said we're going to read the Bible or, hey, this series, we're memorizing the fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Thinking about this summer. Let's all review it. Or, hey, can you say them? Have you memorized them?
Yeah.
It's simple things like that. And then I think the harder is when you do see someone sinning, and often in a group, a very common thing is you see a spouse mistreating the other spouse.
Mm.
Snide comments, cutting them off.
Mm-hmm.
With their words or their faces.
Yes.
Back to faces and eyes.
Yeah, no eye rolling.
And it's, do you say something or not?
Yeah.
And that's how close is the relationship?
Yes, yes.
How well
you need
know
permission. Yeah. There's a level of consent that
and
needs to
And that's a
happen.
Private thing. That's You yeah. don't stop.
And not in the middle of the group.
Not in the middle of the group. This is something that's one-on-one in private.
Yeah, no, that's good. And look, I personally, if I'm headed over a cliff, I want someone to go,
right.
Stop, Lisa.
Right.
You're heading over a cliff. So it's really loving to, it may not feel like way in the moment. I probably would get irritated with you if you tried to tell me to stop walking. But ultimately, I'd be like, man, they were just trying to help me not go over that cliff.
I've been in situations where someone said, I think I smell alcohol on their breath.
Mm-hmm.
But being unsure, saying, would you double check that's, and then in this case, it was no. I think that was simply.
Mouthwash or something.
But there's been other cases where it's like, no, actually,
yeah,
there's a drinking problem. And that led to very important conversations for someone who's destroying their life.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all got to be done in love.
That's not right. In
judgment. It's not in, we're trying to make you conform to what we want. It's like, we really, really believe that the way God has laid things out is best for you. And we want to see you.
That's right. To flourish.
And thrive. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So my next question is about generosity. I love that line in the description of first church group in Acts that talk about how they added to their number daily,
right.
And they took care of each other. No one was in need. And so how can we be generous? How can generosity play a part in caring for each other?
Yeah, I think some of it is really simple, as much as a baby shower and blessing a couple with having their first baby with things they really need. To all of us hit snags in our lives where somebody's out of work. And I've seen life groups take up gift cards.
Yeah.
Or maybe it gets really dire and it's, hey, we need groceries.
Yeah.
And food. Or in addition to that, it's, let me network with you and for you. Let me actually spend some time helping you with your resume or making contacts. Those sorts of things can be really helpful. Or, I mean, I'll just confess, I'm not handy, like, at all. I'm not mechanical. And gosh, groups over the years, men who are far more handy than I am, have come over and fixed things at my house, repaired things, built things, repaired things. And it was such a blessing
to me.
It's
a huge blessing, yeah.
I mean, I felt a little embarrassed, like, I should be better at this, but I'm not.
But you're gifted in many, many other areas.
I've long come to terms with that. But it's a super practical, you might be doing that for single moms.
Yes.
Or for someone like me who's just not handy.
Yeah, for sure.
What a blessing.
Yeah, I remember one of our very first groups my husband and I were in, this single mom, her porch was literally falling apart. Like, it was unsafe. And it was the only way to get in the house. And so a bunch of the guys took their tools over there and fixed her porch. And, you know, it just felt like a good thing. Like, everyone, it felt good for everyone. Like, she got a new porch and everyone got to help her. And it is really hard sometimes to admit your need. So I just commended her for her, like, owning it. Like, hey, my porch is falling apart and I don't have the money to call somebody to help.
And some of it is, like, pretty personal stuff that, like, somebody after a surgery saying, I actually can't make the beds. I can't change the beds. It's just too hard after this procedure. And I can't lift a certain amount of weight.
Right.
So
which happens a lot for people.
Yeah, I cannot actually pick up the laundry basket and do my laundry. And so I know situations where a group member has gone over and said, I will change your beds and I will do your laundry.
Yeah.
And it can be kind of embarrassing, or you can feel like, don't want someone to do that, but talk about building a caring community.
Yes.
And there's people who want to do that for each other.
Yes, they would be happy to.
Please let me come change the beds and do the laundry. You really don't want me doing the laundry, but I would
Oh, come on, Bruce, you can run a washing machine.
I would ruin your clothes.
But yes, I think that's where that, you know, care and vulnerability kind of go hand in hand. And that willingness to serve one another and to be generous.
It's I find part of this in a group, there are people who are chronically needy who ask for help all the time, but most people hold back.
Yeah.
And I would say another way to develop a caring group is to admit you need something.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, it is so hard to ask for help.
Yes.
And kind of the American ethos is, I can do it myself.
Yes,
and
I don't need anybody. Yeah.
I don't need anybody. I'll figure it all out and do it. And to actually go, I actually do need some help. And it really would be super helpful if you could fill in the blank.
I know I have a friend, and we've talked, the way we were raised was you don't make work for other people. And that was like the ultimate sin was making work for other people. And so it really trained. And I think a lot of women, particularly in my generation, were kind of raised that way. And so, yeah, that makes it really hard to ask for help.
I was in a situation where, for different reasons, I mow my own yard, but that wasn't happening for, and someone came in in our church and mowed my yard for like 2 months.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was like, this is really helpful. And
yeah. Yeah. So it's being willing to, and that, like you said, that's where the community is really built.
And I kind of wanted to pay for it and be like, no, no. And I was like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, don't make it awkward, Bruce. I'm doing this because I want to help. Okay. What are any other practical ideas on how we can show love to each other? You know, so we can serve one another, be generous to one another.
Well, you started off, I think, at kind of the foundational, we've got to be known and loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can know each other. You can say hi in a church service. In a small group, you have a couple hours, 2, maybe 3 hours to talk. If you really want to develop the relationships, you need to get together one-on-one.
Yeah.
So what I would practically encourage you to do is invite another couple to dinner.
Yeah.
In the group, someone you already know, and go have breakfast, have coffee, have lunch, have dinner, have them to your house, and get to know them at a deeper level. And so some groups will do something like kind of a matchmaking deal, like, okay, let's all, between these meetings, have dinner with each other. Or
yeah, draw a name out of the hat and go to dinner.
And actually, all those things are worth doing.
Yeah.
Whatever, you draw the names out, we're going to have dinner with a different person each month with something. It's the what you do between the meetings.
Yeah.
And so that's another way, very practically, that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you go do something social together, fun together, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, that's good.
Go to Topgolf.
That's good. Yeah. that's fun. Okay. Are there any barriers that you see or obstacles that you see or things that you've seen over the years where groups have made this really hard and they're not caring that you would say?
I think a couple mistakes. One is back when you talked about being a teacher,
mm-hmm.
is to make the whole thing a Bible study.
The
Bible sure needs to be there, and I want people studying the Bible.
Yeah.
But there's a few groups where someone has really loved teaching. They've loved hearing themselves talk, if I was being ugly.
Yeah.
But they've gone on for an hour, and they're really lecturing the group.
And there's no time for anything
else. Or preaching
else.
Or teaching.
Yeah.
And it takes up the whole group's time. And it's not really helping the group go. You think it is, but it's really not.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what you want to do. So there's someone who's going on, like, I think a series on Revelation that went on for like over a year every single time. That doesn't work well. I think some groups keep the conversation at a superficial level and they never go deeper. And the leader doesn't initiate going deeper. And the group just stays superficial.
Mm-hmm.
Another challenge, it's a good challenge, is a group growing. You want new people to come.
Yes, you do.
You do not
You don't
want
to be one of those
insular. If you close the group, it becomes insular. Now, you might close it for like a period of time.
Sure.
But we want new life is good. But you need to integrate those people. So a mistake is just to assume the new person pops in and they know your group. Your group has a culture. Your group has relationships. So simple things to do are to say, hey, let's all reintroduce ourselves. You can do that a few minutes, but then say, hey, let's all tell our life stories again. It's been a few years since we did that. And let the new person tell their story to the whole group, and then have the group tell a little more about themselves or each night someone tell, each meeting someone tells something. Yeah. But it's integrating new people well.
That's good. That's really good. Also, I think one challenge I've had with women's ministry is sometimes groups get really big. And what really needs to happen is a new leader needs to rise up.
That's right.
And there needs to be, the group needs to multiply.
That's right.
And people really, really resist that. And I get it because you love each other and you want to be together. Right. But, you know, the only way we're going to be able to integrate new people in is if we make space for them. And we need new leaders to rise up to do that. Right.
And what I encourage is rather than splitting your group in half and the original group doesn't exist anymore, now there's two, that's kind of like a divorce.
Yeah.
But in a healthy family, you send out your children and often they meet somebody and they get married and they start a new family.
Yeah.
And you still have family reunions, but it's a new family and that's something you celebrate. You're thrilled at the wedding, thrilled at the new baby's coming. That is healthy. And so for a group, and by the way, the mom and dad keep existing as a family.
Yeah.
So I think the group, as it's getting bigger, still exists as a group and you raise up leaders and you send out a leader, and then a few people might want to go with them.
Mm-hmm.
The group continues to exist.
Yes, yes.
It does not divide. It's or split. It stays together, and it sends out leaders to start a new family, a new group.
Yeah.
And then the whole groups can occasionally all get together.
Yeah. Yeah, you can have a picnic where it's like all the family tree.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and that's a beautiful thing.
But yeah, I think that's really, really healthy because we want, first of all, we want more people to step into facilitating a group. And we really want people to, if you have a group of 40 people, it's really going to be hard for everyone to feel cared for.
Right. You can't even all share your prayer request.
Right.
And
yeah.
You can't know each other. And it ends up people don't come as often to the meeting because they assume it doesn't really matter. If you only have 6 people in the group versus 40, it's just a completely different dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, there's kind of a sweet spot in between 6 and 40.
That's
right. And it depends on the group and the,
And
the dynamics of the group. But yeah, you definitely don't want to get so big that you're out of space and out of time and out of capacity for one another to know
you
one another.
From a group to a crowd.
Yes, pretty quickly. Yeah, I think these are all good, some practical suggestions on how we can show care for one another. Because I know one of the things I sometimes hear about churches is, you know, someone will leave a church and then they'll say, well, that church didn't care about me. And you say, well, you know, not first, that's not the first thing you ask, but if you get to know and you have a conversation with them, what you sometimes learn is they weren't in any kind of group. They only just attended the services and maybe only once or twice a month. And then they hit a big life crisis.
Right.
And nobody showed up. And it's because no one knew them.
Right.
And no one knew about the problem.
Right.
And then you're like, well, but then they take away with that church didn't care about me. And so I think churches generally want to create environments. And I know a lot of people sitting in our, you know, congregation want to love on each other, but they got to know you. And they're not going to know you if you're just a face in the crowd.
That's right.
So that's another reason to be in a group if you're not in one.
It is.
And if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I don't even live in McKinney, somehow you found this podcast through other means, you know, plug into a church.
That's right.
And as you say all the time, I love this. You also said in your sermon last week, if you go to the first group and you don't like it, that's okay. That's probably normal.
That's very normal.
Just try again.
That's right.
Don't give up. All right. Well, Bruce, do you want to pray for us?
Sure.
And our people?
God, thank you for the way you created us as relational beings, and thank you for your love for us. And Lord, I pray you'd help us to grow in caring and loving for each other in our groups and give us the courage to be vulnerable ourselves and give us the love to reach out to others and care about them more than we care about ourselves. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. All right, everybody, we will see you back next week.